Well, Doc.
Yeah, Pete.
we're biting off a big piece here today, aren't we?
And we're gonna chew it.
And we're hoping that you want to come along and see what we spit out.
Yeah.
But today we're going to tackle the number of the beast, 666. You know, there's a lot of speculation. I think we can roll all the way back into our first episode when we were like, hey, just so you know, if your ideas of end times has been formulated by movies out of Hollywood and paperback publishers, you're going to have a problem. And so we're trying to ask you right now just to hold the line with us. I know that you guys want to run off and kind of do an end around and get out into some of the juicy stuff. But look, we're trying to lay this foundation for you so that when we get there, when we get into the end zone, we'll catch the ball.
Yeah.
Right? Well, just how's that football analogy, right?
Right. Yeah, so we want to throw out a few foundational things with you here today to get ready for understanding the 666, which of course occurs in Revelation 13:18. So to do that, we need to be in chapter 1 of Revelation.
Yeah.
And to understand a few things that are different from our times that we live in now to those times that they lived in, because it'll help with our understanding.
And I think of the other thing too, if I may,
you may.
It's Revelation,
and it is the revelation. The very first words of the book, it is the revelation of Jesus Christ.
Hallelujah.
The primary purpose of this book is not to give you speculative schemes about Antichrist. Okay.
What?
Nor even to make you afraid in a negative
there you go,
crouching, you know,
yeah,
fear, depressed sense.
Yeah.
That's not that kind of fear, but
right.
But a right kind of godly fear, yes, that would be good. So the revelation is of Jesus Christ. It points to him. The whole thing is about him. Now, of course, we get to talking about the opposition. We get to talking about the dragon. We get to talking about the beast and these different figures.
Right.
And we'll get there. But so that's how he starts the book. And then if you jump down to verse 3,
yeah,
you have some words that need to be understood too. Because as a modern reader, you read this, and it says, blessed is he who reads. Oh, that's good. I'm here with my smartphone, and I have the book of Revelation on it, and I'm reading the book of Revelation. That's me. Well, it is you, but for the first people that received this in the first century,
come on,
they didn't have their own copies. In fact, he who reads and those who hear, it's a setting in a local congregation.
Right.
They gathered together. They received a letter, whether they were in Ephesus or Pergamos or one of these towns,
right,
of these seven, and it's thought that each of them received one, so that there were seven of them. But what happened at the Sunday service is the pastor got up and said, we have a letter here from John. And by the way, the book of Revelation is also a letter in addition to being an apocalypse. It's a broken genre, actually, because in verse 4, he sets it up like a letter, but then he kind of moves away from that as you go into it, right? Where he says, John, to the seven churches which are in Asia, grace to you and peace. That's just the same way Paul writes his letters.
Absolutely.
However, by the time you're a few verses down, you're like, dude, this is no letter. This is an apocalypse. And yet it is a letter of sorts. So, and then certainly you have the seven individual letters to the seven different towns. But my point is about verse 3 is there's one guy reading and a whole congregation of people listening.
Right.
And they're going to go home from that service,
yeah,
without their own personal copy. Okay. They have to remember what they were told, what was read off of that letter from the Apostle John. And that's quite different than our situation. where we can pop it up on a screen in seconds mm-hmm. and have it anytime we want it.
You can call your local theologian and find out exactly what's going on.
And I think what that helps us with is one of the reasons for the subject of Jesus and the events surrounding his second coming, so that people could remember it, it's in apocalyptic symbolism and imagery because it's easy to remember.
Hey, that's good.
You could say, like chapter 12, you could say, well, now we're going to talk about Satan, you know, and Satan does this and Satan does that. And or you can say, no, there's this dragon.
Yeah.
And his tail grabs these stars out of heaven. And you're like, whoa, dude, it's like a movie, right? It's not a movie, but it's like it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's easy to remember.
That's good. I remember you saying that at one time.
Yeah. So that's the style of the book of Revelation. All right. Now, one other foundational thing that we want to start with here is who wrote the book of Revelation?
John did.
John. And we believe it was the Apostle John. There are different theories where people say, well, it was some prophet named John or some other guy. But we believe it was the Apostle John, the same guy that wrote the Gospel of John and the three epistles of John.
Right, first, second, and third.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if that's true,
here we go.
That's our starting point.
Drum roll.
Okay. If that's true, then we have a question we've got to answer. A subdued drum roll.
Yes.
Right. Because if the same guy wrote all five of these books that we just mentioned, mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah.
Then, and if the person that is described in chapter 13 is the Antichrist,
right?
Then why doesn't he use the term Antichrist?
See, isn't that good?
Because he certainly has it.
It's not like it, right.
He uses it in 1 John chapter 2, chapter 4, and 2 John verse 7.
He's like,
he's got the term.
What was that word that I used back in there? I'm trying to remember the,
what was that?
Man, I don't know.
Let's call him a beast.
Let's call him a beast. He's a beast.
No. He is writing by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. Let's remember that, too.
That's good, too.
Yes, sir. That's
two very foundational things.
That's exactly right.
All right, good.
And think about it, listener. The Holy Spirit would reach into human affairs on this earth and inspire a guy to communicate truth in apocalyptic language.
Wow.
Which is not unique to the inspired scriptures. We have two of them that we call apocalyptic books. That's Daniel in the Old Testament and Revelation in the New Testament. But there are many other apocalypses that were written by Jews, especially in the intertestamental period. And so it was a style. It was a style of writing. It was a style of communicating. And one of the key features of it was the exaggeration of what it was describing to make that point. Mm. So as I just said, you don't just say Satan. You say a dragon, a red dragon, a big tail. He's pulling stars out of heaven, that guy. And everybody's like, whoa, dude. No, is Satan literally a dragon?
No.
No, he's a spirit being. He was Lucifer, remember? He rebelled against God.
He created.
He was cast out of heaven.
Intellectual being?
Yes, he is. Absolutely. But he's not a dragon, literally.
Right.
So if you're waiting and you're interpreting Revelation chapter 12, and now here you are at the end of the age, and you're waiting for a dragon, you know, to show on your smartphone screen, you're going to be disappointed. But the dragon communicates.
Yeah.
Dragons are terrible. I mean, what do? They destroy people. Fire comes out of their mouth. They're a mythical creature, right?
They guard gold.
Right. We better.
No, I got that off of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And my kids would probably be happy that I remembered that.
Okay, right. So So anyway, so we lay those foundational things in front of you here so that when we jump over to chapter 13, which we're going to do right now,
okay,
that you understand that apocalyptic language is not speaking literally. And then this other thing, if we got the same guy writing this and he doesn't use the term Antichrist, you got to ask why.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, because it just, you would think he would.
Right. And I think from just the reading that I've been doing and looking at, like, I'm not as after it as kind of as you are, but everything that I read now, I've got this radar on, because as soon as someone says Antichrist, they'll jump right into the beast, what the beast is doing.
The little horn.
Or the little horn, or whatever. Yeah. Immediately they make the stretch for you, and then they carry it. They carry the theme of whatever that thing is as though it is the Antichrist.
Right.
Or that this idea that the Antichrist had to have come out from us, which means that at one point in time, he was one of us, but he came out. So it can't be someone, right, that had no affiliation with the quote-unquote church. So immediately, right, like this last one that I saw. But anyway, it's all out there. Listener, you know what I'm talking about. I think they do. I really do.
Oh, and before we jump into Chapter 13, let's talk about a couple of notable books we have on the desk with us here today,
okay.
Pete.
Yeah.
This first one, written in 1981, Unveiling the Antichrist.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. And this Antichrist, the book is called When Your Money Fails, the 666 System is Here. So this is way before CB.
Yeah,
Central Bank Digital Currency. Yeah, it's way before that. This is like 40 years before that. And this book definitively identifies the Antichrist, who was alive at that time, as the Egyptian president Anwar Sadat.
What did he think? Because you would think that...
Did he
news,
read the
like,
book?
Did news get back to this
there.
Guy? What?
There's me.
What are these crazy Americans doing up here? My gosh.
There it is.
Yeah. So well,
then we have this other one here. This one's my favorite.
The 666 syndrome.
Gorbachev, has the real Antichrist come? Ooh. And this book sets out to prove that Mikhail, what's his middle name? C, but I think he also gets value out of the middle name here when he's calculating.
When we're trying to calculate the
name?
You got to use the middle name.
You got to use the middle name. Mikhail S. Gorbachev. And so he gives you all the numbers in here, and boy, I'll just say it's interesting.
Right.
And probably not true. I don't think Gorbachev, no. I think he, is he still alive?
I don't know.
He must have died by now. I mean, he was.
He was pretty old back then, wasn't he?
He was a contemporary of Reagan.
Let's find out.
Okay. Anyway, we are.
Gorbachev died. Oh, he just died in August of 22.
Well, see, he's going to recover from his deadly wound.
It hasn't even been a year.
Yeah.
You got to be down for a while. You can't just be like, was he really dead? No.
Yeah.
Well, he was for like 8 months.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
It is, right?
He had a long life.
In 1931, he was born.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he'd have been in his 90s.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
All right. So, here we are at Revelation chapter 13. Verse 1 says this. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name.
Man, that is one jam-packed mamma jamma right there.
Yeah, it's a lot going on there.
Okay,
now if you've read the book of Revelation at all, you find that this seven heads and ten horns is thematic. It occurs over and over and over all through the book.
Yeah, that's good.
And if you really care about what it meant to the first people that were there that heard the pastor read the letter from John, what would it have meant to them? It would have meant the Roman Empire. Because that's the empire that ruled the world at that time.
Right.
All right, so a beast rises up with that. It's an identifier of what we're talking about. Okay?
That's good.
Verse 2, now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth was like the mouth of a lion. The dragon, who's the dragon now?
The devil.
This isn't Puff the Magic Dragon.
Right? Yeah.
No, this is the devil. Gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I would say to you, listener, that this is a point at which you can see the book of Revelation is about all the same subjects that all the rest of the New Testament is about. It's about salvation. It's about sin. It's about redemption. It's about Satan. It's about Jesus, the Christ, the Son of the living God. It's primary and foremost subject. But all the things that the rest of the New Testament is about, that's what the book of Revelation is about. Now, it has some things about the second coming that the other books don't have. I grant that.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what this is saying is, what do the other books of the New Testament tell us about Satan? He is what? The prince and power of the air.
Okay.
He is a motivating evil influence in the governments of the world. Over and over you see that.
Right.
Taught. Jesus says it. Paul says it. Others say it.
Psalms say it.
So, the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. So, in other words, Satan, whoever this beast is, Satan gave him his rule, his reign, right?
Right.
I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded. The deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So, they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast.
There you go. Now there's two distinguishing
things. Whoever the beast
right?
is, when you worship him, you're actually worshiping Satan.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast and who is able to make war with him? And so we go on here, he's given a mouth, he's given authority to continue 42 months. And it was granted him to make war with the saints, overcome them. Authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. The world as they knew it in that day was completely ruled by Rome. Okay?
Right. They would with not be thinking 2,000 years down the road in America the Great.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. All right. So, all who dwell in the earth... on the earth will worship him. That's everybody in the Roman Empire whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear.
I hear.
There's two systems here. There's the system of Jesus.
Yeah.
There's the system of Satan. Okay?
Yeah.
Which one are you in? Okay, then we jump down to verse 11. We have another beast comes up, had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down on heaven from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. He deceives those who dwell on earth by these signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image to be killed. Now look at verse 16. Here's where it gets ominous.
Okay. Oh, like this isn't. Okay, go.
He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, slave and free, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name.
There it is.
Okay, now let's stop right there. Okay. This second beast is commonly called the false prophet. You know, in Bible prophecy language.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So you got the beast, you got the false prophet. What many, many interpreters forget about is this little situation right here. I'm showing it to Pete here on a paper.
Yes.
This shows Asia, the Roman province of Asia, which is where the seven churches were.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Modern day Turkey.
Yeah.
But ancient Asia. And there's actually two maps here.
All right.
So we're going to understand the second beast first, and then we're going to talk about the first one. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So what the text says here is the job of the second beast is to cause people to worship the first beast.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. To cause this to be done, the Roman emperors, primarily starting with a guy named Nero, caused altars to be placed in temples. You didn't actually have to have an emperor worship temple. You could go and talk to the people, the Aphrodite temple, or the Zeus temple, or say Apollo. Any good temple that was in town, you could go there and say, the emperor has made a decree.
Mm.
And now you guys have to allow an altar for his worship to be in here. And they were polytheists. They didn't care. Yeah, their main guy was Zeus, but Hermes is fine, or Mithra, or a whole bunch of other gods, goddesses. They weren't uptight about one specific god.
Okay.
And so this started to happen. And we have the map right here. This map shows the locations of
altars.
How many of them? 175.
Yeah, there's a
176.
All over the continent. From east to west.
Okay, those are just the altars that were placed in other temples. Then, when things really got rolling and the persecution was really cruising, there were imperial temples built, which were dedicated solely to the worship of the emperor.
That's almost twice as much.
It is. And that is where things really got moving, and where it's documented, actually, that you had to have this little script of papyrus that proved that proved you went there and worshiped the emperor.
I can see it now. It's going to be a QR code, and you have to go to the temple. You got to hold up your phone. You got to get in there, and you got to bloop, take the picture of the QR code.
And then the beast people come to your house, and they have their reader, and you hold your phone.
Yep, and it'll show if you made the last 6 out of 7, because they probably give you one slip up.
Oh.
And they'll let you go. But you got to prove that you were there for like 6 out of the last 7 meetings.
Okay, so our point here in pointing this out about the second beast is this has already happened.
Yeah. I think that's the sobering thing for
me. That's the sobering thing. This was fulfilled at least once, or in fact, it's probably fulfilled several times through the history of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
When it depends on how nutty and how much the emperor thought he was a god.
Right.
And this really starts with a guy named Caligula before Nero. he was really a whack job.
Right. We've talked about
him. We've talked about Caligula.
Yeah.
Right. And then you go to Nero, and you can go on after him. You got Domitian and Diocletian, all these guys that... So this isn't just one thing here, but I think for the purpose of what the Book of Revelation is communicating, it is this false prophet who is causing people to worship the emperor. And this is the deal. And it really is this simple. All the symbolism, all the imagery, all the whoa, the movie, special effects.
Sure.
That's what you could call this stuff in the Book of Revelation, special effects.
Ah.
Eh?
I like that.
Yeah. What it's all about is, are you going to worship Jesus exclusively, or are you going to worship the emperor? Are you going to believe the people who say, oh, well, yeah, this Jesus guy, you can worship him, but just come with us. We're just going down to take care of our civic duty to worship the emperor.
Oh.
We'll get our little thing and we'll be all set.
Between God and Caesar.
Mm.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. That might be something right there. Your civic duty.
Was, at least back then, it was to worship the emperor.
And you had to get the piece of papyrus.
You had to show your loyalty.
Wow, that is very... Oh, yeah, never heard that before.
This is all written in books. You can
read. Well, I've never known a historian before. Or a guy that has his PhD in New Testament
all right.
studies.
So, all right. So that's the false prophet. What does the false prophet do? He causes humans to worship the beast.
Right.
The beast is an emperor of Rome.
So now, he's the muscle.
Yeah.
You want to say that?
Spiritually speaking, yes.
Right. Spiritually speaking.
Right.
Not figuratively.
And he's given his power by who? The dragon.
The dragon. The dragon is not figuratively. He is a spirit being, and there's
Satan.
Influence. Dude, if you cannot look around right now and see the muscle that's being flexed right now, and not to like he's, oh, what are we going to do? No, we're the victors, we're the winners in this thing. But people really start to go down this path of like, we're really being oppressed, what are we going to do? How are we going to get out of this? Da-da-da-da-da, the beast, and I don't know how to protect myself, and what about my family? There's a whole cart of worry that people will pick up, and especially if you're not saved.
Right.
But if you're still tied into the verbiage of your friends who are and you're not, you start to get a load on.
This is not a good time to not be saved. Right? As back then, you know?
Yeah, and what didn't they know?
They didn't know that Jesus wasn't going to come in 70 A.D.
Right.
Or in 100, or in 1000, or in 1517, or in 2022.
Right.
We know something they didn't know. So let's acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
So, verse 18.
Yeah.
This is where everybody wants to go.
Let's bring him there.
Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man.
Yeah.
His number is 666. And as you know, listener, this subject has received trainloads of books. And shiploads.
Nominated for Academy Awards.
And we read from the Omen here for you back a few sessions ago.
Yeah.
Right. But he's not literalistically a beast. He's figuratively a beast, just like all these other kings. Just like Nebuchadnezzar was a beast, although it did get a little bit literal for him.
It did.
When he crawled around on the ground.
With his fingernails.
Yeah.
His hair.
Pretty graphic, but this is different. Calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of man. Now let's remember where we laid down our foundation. So John's on the Isle of Patmos. It's a prison island. Mm-hmm. He's there. He's under hard labor.
Right.
This is where political prisoners are sent. They're perceived to be political prisoners of Rome. There's all kinds of soldiers around all the time guarding them, making sure they do their slave work. Okay? So John has this revelation. He tells you in chapter 1, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, and you know, and so forth. And all this happens.
Yeah.
And he knows he's got to get it off of Patmos back onto the mainland to the seven churches.
Good.
How's he going to do that? Well, one thing he's not going to do is he's not going to say, and this beast I'm describing to you is the Emperor Nero. Because somebody for sure is going to read this at some point. I mean, maybe they'll try to sneak it off, but it'll get discovered and whatever. And
it'll get traced back to him.
Even without our present-day tracking stuff. They had ways back then, okay? So John writes in code.
Yeah.
Just as, remember from last time, we said Paul wrote in code somewhat, in a manner of speaking, with the man of lawlessness. And he did not speak in direct language. So it is here with John. So this number 666 obviously has to be handled very carefully.
Right.
Because you can make a lot of things work out to 666. As both of these books I just mentioned to you do.
When Your Money Fails and Gorbachev.
They're just two examples among hundreds of books that have been written.
Paperback publishers, maybe.
Right. Yeah. And so the real 666 is going to be told to you right now. Okay?
Dr. Nichols. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to unveil it right before your very ears.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So I really wondered about this. And I was reading all these books, and I was like, man. All these guys, like they would take, it's gematria, okay? Gematria is the fact that three ancient languages for sure, I don't know about the others, but these three for sure, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, their characters of their alphabet also stand for numbers. At the same time, they are a letter. You can
Alpha
form
and
words
numeric.
With them, but you can also just write them to mean numbers.
Right.
Okay? And that's called gematria. The obvious example that all of you are familiar with would be in Latin, because the letter I, if you see it and you know it's Latin, that means what? One.
Yeah.
The letter V
five.
Means five.
Yeah.
Okay? X means
ten.
Ten. Yeah. And right on up the line. That's gematria. So you don't write T-E-N in Latin. You just put an X.
Yeah.
And that's 10. Okay? All right. Same thing is true in Greek and Hebrew. So when you have to get a message over to the mainland and have it in code so people who shouldn't see what it really is saying...
Yeah.
Can't get it,
right?
What do you do? You say what John said here in verse 18. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. So let's say, for instance, you got a Roman soldier. They all spoke Greek.
Yeah.
Okay. And they found this letter or, confiscated it from somebody trying to head out with it or whatever, or smuggle it onto something.
Yeah.
Whoa, I wonder if this guy's talking about our beloved Emperor Nero.
Oh.
Calculate. Let's see. We all know about gematria. What if we took Nero's name and title and rendered it into the value of Greek, the numeric value of Greek characters? What would that number be?
Yeah, so they get out their pencil. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
What would it be?
It's like
1,005. You all wanted it to be 666. It's not. It's 1,005.
Okay, so the letter made it past the first checkpoint.
First checkpoint. Heading for the second at full speed. All right. Wow, it didn't work out. Okay, because...
Yeah.
when it gets to its destination, which it seems that they did, the churches of Pergamum and Ephesus and Thyatira and all these different cities,
yeah,
it got there, it was read, and it was understood. Because there was surely, in every one of those congregations, one or more Jewish people who knew Hebrew.
Here we go.
Here we go.
This is rubber hitting the road.
All right. So if you take the name Neron and the title Caesar,
right,
and render them into Hebrew characters,
yeah,
and add them up,
yeah,
that total is?
666. Ta-da.
Interesting.
So, but, okay, so what does that mean then? What are you getting at? You're saying...
One more thing, though, before we get to that.
Okay.
Because this is important.
I'm backing up.
All right. So, maybe, listener, maybe you're sitting there saying, yeah, you're just like all these other guys. You know,
sure.
You have a way of manipulating the numbers around. And I thought of that.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm a smart guy, so I thought of that.
I know you are. You're like the smartest
guy
I know.
You know, what if... We could find a historical written document that was written prior to the book of Revelation.
No, you did not.
I did. That had that very spelling where you weren't making it spell it a certain way to make it turn out, well, this letter's got to be in there.
But you mean the Caesar part?
Both Neron and Caesar, both together in one writing.
Yeah.
So I researched that. I went to libraries. This is before computers as we know them now, when I did this, actually.
Right. I was like 12. No, I'm kidding. That's not true.
And I have the document right here in front of me. It's a papyrus that was written in 56 A.D.
Okay. So after...
By anybody's accounting, that is years before the writing of the book of Revelation.
Right. Because we put Revelation at 90, and you put it at...
68, 69...
Okay.
And I'm reconsidering that, but that's another whole subject. In any case, here it is in this papyrus. It starts out by saying, in the second year of Neron Caesar, which is 56 AD. And there it's spelled exactly the way it has to be, to equal 666.
So that you can calculate.
In other words, this was the common way it was written.
Yep.
When people did it in Hebrew, which was not common, okay? It wasn't common for people in Hebrew to write about. In Greek, they certainly did. But once in a while, you get one written in Hebrew, and here it is.
Right.
And that's how it's spelled. You can't fake that. You can't twist it and manipulate it around like all these books do. Well, you know, A is 1 and B is 2 and C is 3.
Yeah.
And you give your little code, and then by the end of the book, well, look here.
It's the decoder ring. You got to find
it. Yeah, Ray Epps is the Antichrist.
Oh, my gosh. So, in other words, what you're saying is that the evidence of this writing in Hebrew superdates
the actual book
of Revelation.
And this is the way they were writing the name and the title together in Hebrew.
Yeah. And you also mentioned to me off mic, which was the, and you mentioned it a little bit at the beginning, where there's this cover language that was used in order to protect... Right. Individuals or what have you. And sometimes Paul comes right out and says, that guy, the guy that caused me all that trouble.
Yeah, he names names.
He names names. So there's a reason why these things get written down the way that they do. So we hope that you got anything else you want to add on to this?
I think that's pretty much it for today, except just this. If it was fulfilled once...
Yeah.
It could be fulfilled again. That's possible.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be.
Right.
And all these people searching and straining and finding a 666.
Yeah.
Here's one on a government document.
Yeah. Which is what this book is.
Freak out. It's
Yeah.
No, don't freak out. Do what chapter one says. Get your eyes on Jesus.
Yeah.
And yes, there was a beast, and there will be beasts. The book of Daniel proves that, a succession of them.
Right, through the image.
Right.
Yeah.
And our eyes are on Jesus.
The statue.
And we are not setting our hopes, our dreams, our eschatology on future super boogeyman Antichrist.
Right, and we're hoping that you won't either.
Amen.
Amen. Well, thanks for joining us today. Hey, just to let you know, also, we have got a book deal for you if you want to write in. And for $35, we've got five of Doc's books that we will send your way. I'd like to pull those up for you, like, really quick. And so, in a bing, bang, and a boom, we've got the Who's in Charge book. We've got the Pharisee Syndrome. And Between God and Caesar, The Kingdom of God, which are both your two new books that you wrote last summer. And then How to Receive Your Healing and Keep It. So, five books, $35. You can write in here to Heart of the Father, P.O. Box 300. That's Rush City, Minnesota, 55069. We'd hope that you'd just say, hey, I'm looking for that $35 book offer, and we'll send it off to you. Thanks again. You guys be blessed.